the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 61 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Boy Who Could Bend and Fall by Ken Scholes. I am your guide in this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. Well, I hope you brought your gear with you today because we're going to go on a little ride, and you'll need to know where you are at all times. So please, stay close. Our journey today comes to us from master storyteller Ken Scholes. Ken Scholes grew up in a trailer outside a smallish logging town not far from the base of Mount Rainier in the Pacific Northwest. Baptized into story at a young age, he fed himself on Speed Racer, Time Tunnel, Land of the Giants, and Marine Boy, sprinkled with a general dose of dinosaur picture books. When he was 13 years old, he read Ray Bradbury's essay, How to Keep and Feed a Muse, and he knew that he had to be a writer. When he was 14, he started writing stories of his own, and by 15 he had started his own rejection slip collection. After a long break away from writing, Ken returned to it after logging time as a sailor, soldier, preacher, musician, label gun repairman, retail manager, and nonprofit director. He sold his first story to Tailbones magazine in the year 2000 and won the Writers of the Future contest in 2004. His quirky offbeat fiction continues to show up in various magazines and anthologies like Polyphony 6, Weird Tales, and Clark's World magazine. Now, in 2006, his short story of Metal Men and Scarlet Thread and Dancing with the Sunrise appeared in the August issue of Realms of Fantasy. And later that year, inspired and taunted by his friends and family to finally write a novel, Ken extended that story and Lamentation was born. Lamentation is the first in a 5-book series from Tor Books called The Psalms of Isaac. And he followed that book up with 3 more books so far, books 2, 3, and 4 in the Psalms of Isaac series, respectively Canticle, Antiphon, and Requiem, which just came out last month. Ken currently lives in Portland, Oregon, with his amazing wonder wife, Jen West Scholes, and his twin daughters, Elizabeth and Rachel. You can find out more about Ken on his blog, which I will definitely be putting in the show notes. My first introduction to Ken Scholes was, once again, by listening to Escape Pod and his story, Edward Bear and the Very Long Walk, which is a charming tribute to Winnie the Pooh, set in the far future, where Edward Bear is the sole survivor on a crashed spaceship, and he must go on a mission to save the rest of the fleet. And it's as I said, it's very charming and a very well-written story. And I have since read many stories and books by Ken Scholes, and really enjoy his brand of storytelling. And I'm very glad to be bringing you this story today, and look forward to bringing you more stories from Ken in the future. Stay tuned. This story today was produced for us by Christopher Monroe, which if you're a listener of the podcast, you know Chris Monroe from his own stories showing up here, namely The Box and The Funeral. And he has also read for us before. But this is his first journey into production, and he did a really good job, and I'm really grateful for him agreeing to produce this story and help me out with the podcast. Christopher Monroe, if you don't remember, is an author, actor, and comedian from Calgary, Alberta, whose fiction has appeared in the Dune Steef Audio Fiction Magazine, The Way of the Buffalo podcast, and, again, here on Journey Into, and numerous other places around the web. His debut novel, Broken Escalator, is available now as an ebook and as a podcast at podiobooks.com. Again, there will be links in the show notes. He likes words and ideas, and occasionally has trouble seeing the difference between horror and comedy, which has led to unexpectedly amusing stories and absolutely terrifying stand-up sets. Now, come with me, and let's journey into the surreal.
The boy who could bend and fall. By Ken Scholes. They called him Slinky Boy because he could bend and fall from the top of the stairs all the way to the bottom with no serious injury, and much to the amusement of others.
Amazing!
Someone said.
Look at it go!
Another added.
Yee-haw!
Ninja Bob shouted. Then he and Larry Sue and Longhair Eddie hauled their toy back up to the top of the stairs for another go, in that small gap between classes at the end of the day. Slinky Boy's real name was Focus Jones. It reflected his parents' most wishful thinking. They were in real estate, and had met and conceived their son, at a personal effectiveness conference, while they were both married to other people. Focus showed up 9 months later. 14 years later, his classmates at Thomas Jefferson High School renamed him in honor of his new exploitable skill.
Wow!
Someone said.
Look at him go!
Another added.
Yee-haw!
What they liked most about it was that he didn't seem to mind at all. He went down making only a slight whooshing noise, then lay still at the bottom. The first few times, of course, he'd sprung to his feet with a bit of a flourish. But after that, when he realized that it was going to be an ongoing fate, he just laid there and waited for Ninja Bob and an ever-changing gang to scoop him up and haul him back to the top. It had been a daily occurrence for as long as he could remember.
You're weird,
Angelica told him after the others left for fifth period. I know, he said. She studied him from behind her thick glasses.
I've never seen anyone as weird as you.
Me either, he said. Then, as an afterthought, he shrugged. Angelica smiled.
Do you want to go to homecoming with me?
That's the first time Slinky Boy realized knowing how to bend and fall could come in handy. The second time was different. It was fourth period a year later. He'd been staying on his own for a week. His parents were at a Self-Leadership in America Life Skills Conference, and they had decided he was old enough to stay home alone. The secretary's tinny voice summoned him over the intercom, accompanied by the snorts and eye rolls of his classmates. His Uncle Joe and his Aunt Margaret waited in the school guidance counselor's office with the principal, Miss McPherson. The long tile strip of hallway smelled like lemon floor cleanser.
I can't believe you don't have a real counselor here.
Uncle Joe was saying. Focus noticed right away that his eyes were red from drinking or crying or both. Aunt Margaret's eyes were red too, but she was Presbyterian and did not drink. The guidance counselor shrugged in an apologetic way. So did the principal. Everyone looked up when Focus walked in. They closed the door. They started to talk in somber, quiet tones. Slinky Boy didn't remember much of what they said. They caught bits about the plane crash, about his new home with Uncle Joe the alcoholic and Aunt Margaret the pious. But after the first 5 minutes, he was bending and falling, bending and falling, bending and falling.
What on earth is that whooshing noise?
Aunt Margaret asked.
What the hell is he doing?
Uncle Joe added.
He didn't learn that here,
the guidance counselor said. The pain rolled on. Slinky Boy bent and fell around it. Years later, in the last conversation Focus Jones had with his wife before she left him, she asked him about it.
Where do you go, Focus?
Slinky Boy looked up at her. She still tugged at his heart when he looked at her, but he'd never quite learned how to say so. I don't know, he said. Her eyes told him she wanted more. Someplace else, he added. Someplace not here. The force of her sigh signaled exasperation, like the last breath slipping out of a love grown old and tired.
I can't live with you anymore.
The rest of the conversation faded into whooshing. When the world reconstituted itself around him, Slinky Boy sat alone in his half-empty house. At one point, someone suggested therapy might help. The counselor, a real one, not a guidance one, sat on a comfortable chair, and Focus Jones sat on a comfortable couch. It was a simple room, with a desk in one corner, mood lighting, and a bookshelf filled with an odd assortment of titles. You Can Learn to Fly, Bartleby's Guide to Living Well, and Parent Blaming for Dummies. It smelled like peppermint. On the third session, she asked about the bending and falling.
So, this started back in high school.
She sipped her tea and waited. Focus nodded. Yes.
How do you feel about it?
She sipped her tea again and waited. Focus shrugged. I didn't feel anything about it. She set down her tea, picked up her pen, wrote something down. She set down her pen, picked up her tea.
Really?
Focus felt like a child caught playing with his mother's underwear. It must have shown on his face.
Do you think maybe this...
She looked at her notes.
Bending and falling could be a way of dealing with your parents' death.
I was doing it before they died. Down went the tea. Up came the pen.
Really?
Yes, he said, but he couldn't remember exactly when he'd started. An uncomfortable pause settled in. The counselor watched him and sipped her tea.
Where do you go, Focus?
The counselor finally asked. I'm not sure. I never open my eyes.
Why don't you open your eyes?
He thought for a moment. When no words drifted up, he shook his head.
Maybe,
she said,
you're afraid that if you opened them, you'd see that you were back where you started. That you hadn't gone anywhere at all.
He deflated. He melted into the couch. He groaned inwardly. The counselor smiled.
We'll come back to that next time. Why don't we talk a little about your mom?
Slinky Boy saw her lips moving, but all he heard was whoosh as the world spun away. Speaking of worlds... The end of the world landed on a Tuesday just a few years later, and no one knew to roll out a red carpet by way of greeting. That is to say, it was painfully sudden and terribly unexpected. This group had bombs, that group had diseases, the other group had airplanes and missiles and multiple payload delivery systems. It was an apocalyptic clusterfuck of global proportions, but terribly effective. Look, up in the sky! Exhaust streaks like fuzzy spaghetti noodles draped over Grandma's blue quilt. Then, a sky the color of amber under rainbow clouds that roiled and twisted and burned the eye. Bacteria rumbling in the thunder. Viral rain, at first a sprinkle, then a downpour. Slinky Boy turned off the news and went out to his yard. Others were gathering to watch it all go, but not him. They turned to him with white and wild eyes. Whoosh.
Wow.
Someone said. Whoosh.
Look at it go.
Someone added. Silence. Eyes tightly shut, he bent and fell. More silence. Oppressive and ominous and safe. I can do this, he told his eyes. Slinky Boy forced them open and looked out on a whole new world. Purple trees and lemon skies and peach grass. The smell of the circus and fresh-cut lawn. The sound of glass flowers tinkling in the breeze. The taste of chocolate and cinnamon on the air. He reached back, far back, to find some word to express this latest discovery. "Yeehaw," he said, to no one in particular at all.
Well, I for one wish Focus good luck on his journey into this vast new world. Before we move on, let's once again get out our field guides and go over the cast of characters for this story. First of all, we have Christopher Monroe as the narrator and as Focus Jones. And again, Chris also produced this story for us. We have Brad Duffy as someone. We have Alex McDonald as another. Cliff Lowe played Ninja Bob. And Kat Fullerton played Angelica and Focus's wife. Lawrence Simon played Uncle Joe. Michelle Restuccia played Aunt Margaret. Alex Mackey was the guidance counselor. And Becky Shrimpton was the real counselor. Well, I kind of introduced this story as being a surreal story. And I say that probably without knowing much of what I'm talking about. I think surreality can best be defined as being in a dreamlike state, where irrational things seem to be possible, or there might be an uncertainty whether it's real or whether it is a dream or something otherworldly in nature. And I have to say that our producer, Christopher Monroe, is no stranger to surreality. I wanted to talk a little bit more about his book, Broken Escalator. I listened to it on Patio Books, and it's a really, really good listen. It's a very hard novel to describe. You could call it surrealist. You could call it horror. You could call it science fiction. You could call it fantasy. You could call it a psychological thriller. There really is no boundaries to its definition. And it's very interesting. It keeps you engaged throughout the whole book. And because of its obscure premise, you really never know where it's going to go or what's going to happen. Probably the best way for me to describe this novel to you is to run this promo and let Chris introduce it to you for himself.
On October 5th of last year, the escalators at West Edmonton Mall shut down simultaneously due to what was believed at the time to be a series of mechanical failures, stranding thousands on the second floor. By the time a rescue operation could be organized and mounted, nearly everyone in the mall's upper level had been killed. And to this day, few people, if any, understand what really happened during the period where that area of the mall was cut off from the rest of the world. My name is Christopher Monroe, and this is the story of what happened to me. This isn't the whole story of what happened at West Edmonton Mall that horrible day, but it is my story. This is the story of the people I met, the things I had to endure, and the lengths I went to survive a broken escalator.
Well, as I said, it's a really fun listen, and I recommend it heartily. Be advised, there is some pretty strong violence in parts of the book, but I think you'll find it enjoyable. And I would definitely consider it another surreal story. So let's talk a little bit more about surreality. And I guess going back to its roots, surrealism was started as a culture movement in the 1920s and was mostly represented by art and writing of that time. In my mind, one of the most famous surrealist artists was Salvador Dali. He did many surrealist paintings, and he was very well known and respected for that. And I remember in Hitchcock's movie Spellbound, which took place in an asylum and dealt a lot with psychology and concepts based around what is real and what is not. And there's a part of that story where the main character keeps having this dream, and they're trying to figure out exactly what this dream means, and there's a sequence in there where the dream is represented in cinema, and Salvador Dali was brought in to design the set and the costumes for that sequence. And it is pretty impressive. I guess speaking of movies, I guess other examples of surreality in movies, probably the biggest example that comes to my mind would be the end sequence of 2001 A Space Odyssey, where Dave has left the spaceship and has gotten into a shuttle pod. And he encounters a monolith out in space, and he's kind of jettisoned into this tunnel of light, and we go through him with this journey and all the things that he sees and experiences, and you know, there's really no way to describe in words or in coherent scenes, you know, the things that he is understanding at that point. And so that becomes a very surreal sequence, and you're kind of left at the end saying, huh? What was that? But that's really kind of the point of that ending. I guess another movie that's set out in space with that kind of a tone would be Solaris. And there's been a couple movies done of that, but it's based on a novel by a Polish writer, Stanisław Lem. So in this movie, there's a scientific space station that's orbiting around the planet Solaris. And they've been studying this planet. And in the beginning, a psychologist named Chris Kelvin, which in the latest movie is played by George Clooney. And a lot of people didn't like this movie because, mainly I guess, because they didn't like George Clooney. But I thought the movie was very good. But anyway, this planet has a lot of psychological effects on the crew, and I believe when he gets on board, it seems like the entire crew of scientists has disappeared or has died, possibly even killing each other. And eventually he does find one crew member that's alive. But everything starts to become subjective, and he also begins seeing his dead wife, who he feels guilty for her death. And you really begin to question what is real, what is vision, is it just coming from the planet Solaris, or what's really going on? And actually, I just thought of another movie along those lines, which is Sphere, which was a book that was written by Michael Crichton, I believe even before he wrote Jurassic Park. And it's actually one of my favorite of his novels. And there was, again, another movie that was done of that novel, and again, a lot of people didn't like this movie, but I really did. It wasn't as good as the book, but it was still a good movie. But the movie starred Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone and Samuel L. Jackson, and they all did a really good job. And this movie takes place deep under the ocean, and there's been this extraterrestrial sphere that has been found in a spaceship at the bottom of the ocean. And so there's this research facility that's on the bottom of the ocean, and the government has essentially gathered together these group of mathematicians and scientists and psychologists to handle this first contact with an extraterrestrial being or phenomenon. And it's all based on a report that Dustin Hoffman's character put together for the State Department. And essentially, this sphere, when they come in contact with it, gives them the ability, and you don't know this at first, so this is a spoiler if you're looking forward to watching the film or seeing the movie and being surprised, because that's part of the mystery, is what's going on with this sphere and everything that's going on around it. But basically this contact with the sphere gives them the ability to manifest whatever they imagine or come up with, And so it's kind of a psychological thriller based on what our human minds can come up with our fears, with our desires, and all the things that get in the way. So again, you don't know what is real and what is just a manifestation. If it is a psychological manifestation, is it still real? It's really a good book, and I enjoyed the film as well, like I said. And I know I'm probably missing the point of surrealism. I'm just thinking of psychological things of the mind where things aren't clear between reality. And I'm sure that the surrealist purists out there are cringing because of the examples I'm giving of what surreal means to me. Because I'm sure there's a deeper level than what I'm getting. But, you know, just this sense of things being real or not real, things being irrational and dreamlike, and you can't put a handle on exactly what's going on. You know, to go even further back away from the pure meaning of surreality, you know, and taking that dreamlike thing. I mean, look at a movie like Nightmare on Elm Street, where the horror of that is that Freddy Krueger can come after you in your dreams, and he can use that irrational, dreamlike atmosphere to affect you and essentially kill you in your sleep. I did look up some lists of surrealist movies and writings, and I have to admit, most of them I have never seen or heard of. A lot of them are foreign films, and again, a lot of them are older, back from the 1930s, when surrealism was kind of the new thing. Some of the lists, though, were quite broad in their list of surreal material out there, you know, almost to the point where anything that would be considered fantasy could be defined as surreal if you make the definition broad enough. And again, the only writing that I can think of, and it wasn't on any of the lists, but books that I could think of would be like Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll, where, again, you don't know what's real, what's not. Things, very strange things are happening, and all these very strange characters that Alice is running into and interacting with is very surreal, very unworldly or unreality, however you want to say that. So anyway, that's just some of my thoughts on surreality and some examples that I've run across. Before I end this episode, I do want to put up a help wanted sign for the podcast. There's a couple things that I could use some help with that would help me manage my time a little bit better. You know, essentially, I'm a one-man show. I'm doing everything for the podcast. I'm editing, I'm hosting, I'm producing, and I'm dealing with the website and all these different things. And, you know, that becomes very time-consuming. And I'm not complaining, I'm just telling you that it does take a lot of time to do all that and put all that together. And so, you know, the things I love best are the production side and the hosting and the editing. And I could use some help in other areas that take time away from those things that I enjoy most and the reason I got into podcasting in the first place. So as I said, I guess there's two positions or two areas of help that I would like. The first one is just being in charge of putting together or getting other people together to put together the episode art. I'm not looking for original art every week. Of course, if somebody wanted to do that, that would be fantastic, but I know that it would be impossible for somebody to do that. And, you know, I know the Drabblecast has a core of people that Bo Kier manages the episode art for that, and they do essentially have original episode art for every episode. That's a lot more than what I personally put into it. You know, basically, I look for pictures or art out on the internet that represents that story, and I put on the logo and the title of the story and try to make it look nice and make it appropriate to the story. And I do enjoy doing that, but it does take some extra time. And so if anybody would be willing to step in and do the episode art or to organize the episode art and have other people help them, if somebody wants to create original episode art, that's fantastic. So anyway, if you are willing to help, send me an email at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com and we can work something out. other area of expertise that I would like some help with is just somebody to help me with the technical aspects of it. That gets left behind a lot. I don't have any real tracking of downloads and things like that. I can go to archive.org and see how many downloads each story has, but I would have to go to every story and look at that. I don't have anything that really aggregates that all together, and I know that there's probably software out there that can do it, but I haven't really researched that. But I would also like somebody that could help me not necessarily promote the podcast, but to give it a better presence, where I don't even have a picture in iTunes for the podcast. It's just the standard podcasting symbol on there, and I know that wouldn't be too hard, but I just haven't gotten around to doing it. And I know that there's other venues out there that the podcast could be listed on rather than iTunes, even though that's the most prevalent. And the website and the main header and everything, I know it could use a facelift. And if anybody would be willing to help me with that, again, contact me at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. I really do want to improve this podcast in many ways, but I'm kind of past the point where I could improve it and continue to do it all by myself. I am trying to improve the sound of the podcast. I know that's been uneven a little bit, and I do have a new microphone, and I'm trying to find the best settings on that to make it sound better. And I'd really like to engage with the audience more. You know, I put up the forum. You know, every week I ask for people to go join the forum, but I know that that's just another step that people would have to go to interact with the podcast, and not everybody wants to do that, and I don't expect everybody to do that. And a lot of people have contacted me on Facebook. A lot of people have just sent emails, you know, said nice things in other places, and so I know that the forum isn't the only place that people can go, but I always do encourage you to go there, that journeyinto.freeforums.org. But I am going to be trying a few different things over the next few weeks, trying to change things up on the podcast and make them better and make it shine a little more. You know, when I was at New Media Expo, I picked up this book, and it's called 1001 Ways to Make Your Podcast Pop. It was written by Lee Hunkersnunker, and so I've been reading over this book, and I think I'm going to try to implement some of these ideas, and Lee assures me that if I follow his steps and do the things that he says, that this podcast will really pop. So one of the things that he has in this book is regarding theme music. And so I'm thinking, okay, hey, I've got my opening theme music. People like that. I like it. It gets me energized when I listen to it. So I'm good there. But he also talks about having ending titles and how important that is to leave people wanting more. He said it's really good to make it personal at the ending so that people really connect with you at the end. He talked about a lot of different things. He talked about on TV when there used to be a lot of variety shows. That would really be a clincher, is the ending of a variety show. So today I'm going to try a little something different and in this podcast in a little bit different way. And I've never done this on the podcast before, and it does scare me a little bit, and hopefully it won't scare you away. But I'm going to sing for you on my way out tonight. And you may recognize that it is from a popular variety show from my youth, but I think it speaks from my heart. So here we go. May tomorrow be a perfect day, filled with loving and laughter along the way. May God keep you in His tender care, till He brings us together again. Journey on, everybody!
Hi, this is Matt Weller from Escape Pod and Broken Sea Audio and various other places online. I'm here to let you know that Journey Into is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial, no derivatives license. That means please get out there and share it with everybody that'll take it, but make sure that you do not change it or sell it, because that would be wrong. The theme music for the podcast has been provided by Man in Space.